Welcome back to Blue Skies and Green Pastures. I'm your host, Paula Adams. Today is February 14th, 2023. Happy Valentine's if you celebrate it. Today we have a really interesting topic, and I put a lot of research into this. I put a lot of time because I just kept finding more and more paths to explore. So it's going to be kind of long. I might even have to put it into two parts. But what is it? Animal rights extremism. So let's just get started right here with an introduction to the topic. So let me start by explaining that there is a difference between those who want to outlaw and prosecute animal cruelty but still allow farming and eating meat. And then there are those who want to make veganism a law. I personally do not know anyone who thinks it's okay to abuse animals or thinks that puppy mills are a good thing, or who thinks that inhumane treatment of animals is ever right. The difference between these groups is that one group recognizes that people have the right to own animals, use them for work, and even eat them because animals are not the same as humans. These people are the animal welfare people. You can find them providing legal and safe sanctuaries for injured and unwanted animals. And they also provide nature education, and they increase the public's empathy and willingness to treat animals with care. This is a good thing. There's no reason that you know, being a good pet owner or, you know, even, you know, loving animals is not a bad thing. But we're not talking about that. We are talking about the second group, which is the group that wants to outlaw owning, working, and eating animals. And probably the most commonly known group is PETA, which we're going to talk about later. And in my research, I have determined that this group has a selfish and narcissistic need to control others, which they act out by defending the rights of creatures that cannot talk. They can't talk back, and they can't, you know, they can't disagree. So I would say that this is a common thing in a lot of social movements, this narcissism. But when you find it in the animal rights movement, it can become extreme. So the same people who believe that eating eggs is violating the rights of chickens have no problem with women who want to kill their unborn children. This is not a consistent view of life. If you believe that animals and humans are the same, then you should defend the rights of humans to live. But many of these people demonstrate clearly that they are not thinking about what is right, only about what makes them feel good or happy. And we've all seen in the news sad examples of animal hoarders who claim that they love animals and want to take care of them, yet they keep them in horrible, unsafe conditions. One lady I saw had 100 animals inside a school bus, and, you know, it was horrible. This woman had moved from state to state, avoiding authorities. She changed her name multiple times, but this woman would be considered an animal rights activist. People like this are mentally ill. Some of them, you know, they might really just be, they mean well, but they're not They're not logical. And they can be dangerous because they have been given a platform in the media. They are teachers in the schools. And they are even gaining ground in the government. So the same people who believe that policies that are designed to protect children from sexual predators are hateful, these people question if it is moral to eat insects because we don't understand the needs of the insects. So if hopefully you can see what I'm saying. These people are not to be trusted with making legal policies that affect us all. The following is a summary of my findings, which I have gathered when I began to research the animal rights activist. I did not go very deep into the animal welfare movement because I think that's at least the little bit that I saw, those people seem pretty normal. So, after learning the term post-humanism, which I talked about in another podcast, I decided to learn more about this movement to declare animals as equal to humans. And, you know, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I encourage you to listen to that podcast. So, I was on Kindle Unlimited looking for something to read. And I like to read dystopian novels. And I had already read like a series of three books. And I was like, maybe I'll find something different. And I saw this one called Now We Are Animals. And I was like, aha, I bet that's post-humanist propaganda. So I read it. And indeed, it was a primer for children in extremist ideology. It was written for ages 12 and up, which we all know children younger than 12 read those books too. So while this book did offer some true and good insights into the wrong ways that humans have been treated by other humans in the past, such as in slavery, it goes too far when it clearly states that humans and animals are the same. So in the book, aliens known as colonists take over the earth and they reduce animals to the status, humans as to the status of animals to be harvested for their organs and used for entertainment in racing. So obviously the author pick those two things, farming and racing, because those things exist in our current culture. All of the adults are killed immediately, but the teens are kept alive on farms where they are fed and fattened up and then slaughtered. And some of them are also bred with other teens. And Kara, which is the main character, she gets to tell the story. So she is special because she is kept as a pet by an alien. And these aliens, they are able to take the shape or the appearance of humans, but they're actually like giant insects. So Kara's owner wants to be her friend, but she's still treated like a lower species. In many ways, she's like, you know, locked in her room. It's like a cage. And when they take her out, if she goes out of the house, she takes her on a leash with a collar. Kara writes down her experiences in a journal given to her by her owner. As the story progresses, Kara's beliefs change. She comes to believe that humans are not different than animals and that it was wrong to think that humans were superior to animals. She also decides that she is no longer going to eat meat after her experiences seeing humans kept on farms and stuff like that. Kara is presented as a kind of a simplistic and selfish girl, But she has a friend, an older, a boy, and this boy is being kept alive by the aliens and used for racing. In other words, like running races, and then they use them like we would use animals, right? So her friend explains to her that it's all just evolution, that they are just like the animals that have been abused over the years. And that was wrong, you know, and that it's wrong for us to treat animals like that too. So he enlightens her. The two owners, these two teenagers discuss that how it's wrong for aliens to move into Earth, take over, and imprison them on farms until harvest time like cattle, and also use them as entertainment. Her friend tells her, it's just like how the colonialists treated the indigenous peoples. And there is also a lot of trans and gay promotion in this book, which, of course, I did not enjoy reading that, but I was reading this, you know, as research. I did find the story thought-provoking as far as the historic treatment of other humans, because it is true that slaves and certain peoples have been treated and considered subhuman by some people, and subjugating them was justified by saying that they weren't really humans. So this is wrong, but it does not apply to animals in the way that these animal extremists want it to apply. So, as we think about animals, by the way, I would not let your child read that book. Not unless you're going to use it as an educational, you know, teaching moment. So as we think about animals, let's define some terms. There's a term that PETA uses called speciesism, and it's commonly used in the animal rights movement. And speciesism is a derogatory term used by those who who believe it is wrong to assume that humans are superior to animals. The truth is, though, that the vast majority of people do believe that humans are superior to animals. And a related term is dominionism, which is a biblical teaching that humans have the God-given right to rule over animals. And we find this in the book of Genesis. This is also a widely accepted idea by people who live in the real world, even non-Christians. Okay, animal rights, which we already talked about a little bit. Animal rights is the idea that animals have the right to be free and self-determining, not be kept as pets or eaten or used for work or experiments, which also includes the ultimate goal of abolishing the historically accepted practice of eating meat, dairy products, eggs, and fish. Animal welfare, as I said before, is the idea that animals should be treated with care, not abused, and kept in humane conditions, which most people would agree is the moral and right thing to do. But eating them is still allowed. So our ideas about animals are shaped by our environment. If you grow up in a vegan family, which veganism is like a religion, not just a, not, you know, it's a, it affects vegans' whole lives, basically.
Get the whole band together with Workday and pair finance and HR on one platform for an epic performance. With Workday AI at the core, you'll make confident decisions faster than ever, and you'll drive flawless business and finance operations with an agile platform that constantly evolves to future-proof your organization. Be a finance and HR rockstar with Workday. Visit workday.com to learn more.
On the other hand, if you lived during a time or in a place where food was scarce, you would be more likely to eat whatever food was put in front of you and not be so concerned about moral implications of eating. And much of what we believe to be fact or truth is actually indoctrination and ideology. So it's not a bad thing to evaluate and question what we believe and make our own decisions. The problem comes when we are not allowed to consider all the sources, such as the truth of the Bible. So a subset of our culture, especially in academia, is leaning away from rational humanism, the idea that humans and progress is in the hands and minds of humans, which is something that, you know, many have considered an anti-God way of thinking. So you might think, well, it's good to move away from humanism. Well, the problem is, post-humanism is even worse. So post-humanism is the idea that humans have no more rights than animals, and it leans towards a type of paganism because it assumes that humans and nature are one and the same. And for post-humanists who do believe there is some kind of a spiritual world, they assign that to the earth itself, that God is the earth. It's all one. We are all part of this Gaia, this one being, this, you know. I talk about that in that other podcast. So how do we get here? How do we get to this point where, well, I think it has to do with the modern world. As people have become very prosperous, we have plenty of food, we have electricity, technology, we are safe from, you know, wild animals, we're safe, most of us, from other people most of the time, unless you, you know, live in the Middle East or Ukraine right now. But most of the people in that have the luxury, the privilege of discussing philosophy are not in fear for their lives or starving or whatever. So that luxury has led to being able to give human characteristics to animals, okay? That term is called anthropomorphism. And we do this whenever we give animals human characteristics, such as emotions, instead of considering that animals are mostly controlled by instinct. And that even if they do have some kind of emotion, it's probably extremely rudimentary. It's not the same as human emotion. Although there are, you know, cases where animals seem to be very human-like, they are still different than humans. This shift in anthropomorphism of animals has naturally followed on the teaching of Darwinian theory that humans evolve from apes. So if humans are animals too, then that would mean that, you know, animals are more like humans and humans are more like animals, and start to blur the line between the two. So this comes down to what we eat. What we eat, which was previously a personal and religious choice and usually an economically based decision, has now become an emotionally charged political issue. And because of the lobbyists and activists working to sway lawmakers, it has now become a threat to freedom. And this has been going on for a while, this lobbying the government to influence people to eat certain foods. But in the past, it was more of a marketing thing. You know, for example, telling people that, oh, you should eat breakfast every day. That was a marketing thing. And, you know, oh, eat healthy whole grains, another marketing thing. But now we have animal rights activists and climate activists working together to influence people to eat plant-based diets, despite evidence that shows that people need animal protein to be healthy. More about that later. So thanks to lobbying from the beef and dairy and pork industries, our government has so far not started pushing the vegan diet that hard, but they are being pressured from many directions to reduce meat consumption. And one way that this is being encouraged is by making meat more expensive. The current Harvard food pyramid says that red meat should be eaten sparingly, but fish and eggs are okay. Of course, the vegans want the fish and eggs taken completely off and no dairy. So this marketing and nudging of dietary changes will increase as more synthetic foods and fake meat become accepted by the public and more cheaper to make. We're still in the early stages of factory produced foods. Okay, moving on to the public debate about these topics. In my research, I discovered that YouTube is full of videos making claims about animal rights. But I noticed that many of the videos were from 2016, and I wondered what happened in 2016. Well, I remembered that 2016 was just sort of a time when the woke cancel culture and social justice was, you know, really rising, and various groups were starting to use the internet to push their message, and lawsuits were being, you know, filed, and so they started making a lot of inroads in various, you know, areas, including animal rights. So how do animal rights activists vote when it comes to another important social issue, abortion? Well, they vote pro-choice. In other words, they are in favor of abortion rights. So while progressives, especially women, are usually in favor of animal rights, they do not have the same passion for saving human lives. Most of them vote against abortion regulations. And they do not see this as contradictory because they don't consider unborn babies to be alive. And they also put the rights of the mother hierarchically above the rights of the unborn child. And remember, these people always love to talk about how hierarchies are bad. Well, that's one hierarchy they seem to be okay with. They also do not see the contradiction in stating that animals are sentient and have legal rights versus the known fact that unborn humans are sentient and do have the legal right to life. And if you check out my blog, I have a link there where you can read an entire, you know, argument where they claim that it's not wrong to be pro-choice. So in surveys on attitudes toward animals, women are always more in favor of laws that protect animals more than men. They're also more likely to adopt rescue animals. They are more likely to consume meat substitutes and less likely to participate in hunting. Since this is a known fact, the goal by animal rights activists is to get men to adopt the same attitudes as women. And this feminization of men can be seen in every aspect of our culture. Thanks to this and the woke movement in general, more men are now in favor of animal protection laws than ever before. And when it comes to animal welfare, that's a good thing. But when it comes to according animals legal personhood, it's not such a good thing. Groups like PETA are specifically targeting youth using celebrities and social media, and they're also targeting the boomer generation using other types of campaigns. So due to peer pressure, teens and college students are more likely to at least try a vegan lifestyle. And with the many processed vegan foods that are now available and even in restaurants, this change doesn't feel like much of a sacrifice to them. But they don't recognize how they're being manipulated by a very powerful mafia, kind of like the BLM movement. So what does PETA want? PETA states on its website that its goal is to end speciesism, which I defined earlier. And some of its work includes good things like shutting down cruel puppy mills and helping stray animals and supporting the practice of spay and neutering. They also want to close down pet stores. They want to end the use of animals in lab experiments. They want to outlaw fur. They want to end circus acts that use animals, horse and dog racing. They strategically attacked SeaWorld. They are evidently also against the use of racing sled dogs. And they want to end the use of animals in TV and movies and other uses of animals such as bullfighting and hunting. So obviously, those are all things that provide people jobs and entertainment, and you know they're part of various cultures. So they have a pretty big agenda. They state that they are not afraid to use provocative and controversial methods, which you can see on their website, because these work best to get media and public attention. They claim they also use more moderate methods and as well as undercover investigations. Their ultimate goal is for everyone to eat a vegan diet and plus all that other stuff. So there's another organization called the Non-Human Rights Project, which works to accord non-human animals legal status as persons. And they use something called habeas corpus. They use litigation, legislation, and education to change the way people view animals. They have filed cases involving elephants, whales, dolphins, and chimpanzees. And they filed their first case in 2013 on behalf of 4 chimpanzees in New York. They are working at the local level first, but their goal is federal legislation. And they are very determined and in it for the long game. So laws like this, providing legal rights to animals, are starting to win approval in other countries such as Argentina And Spain just passed a bill this week that was very controversial and got a lot of resistance. But what does the Bible say? As I prepared to refute these extreme beliefs, I decided to read and find out what the Bible teaches about humans and animals. Should we eat them? Are animals and humans the same in God's eyes? Do they have souls? I came across one article that claimed that Christians should not eat animals because it claimed that all farmed animals are treated cruelly, and because of that, eating them is a sin, which it was kind of ridiculous. But he also compared human slaves to animals, and commenters on this post compared eating meat to cannibalism. Based on the comment sections on this article and others, there are many people out there that are in agreement with this animal rights movement. One of the basic arguments that they use is that we should not eat them because they are sentient beings. But this is an emotionally charged, unprovable claim that ignores the realities of the differences between humans and animals. So let's look at the Bible. Genesis chapter 1 is the creation account, which teaches that God made everything. And I'm not going to go through each day, so we're just going to skip ahead to the fifth day, where it says that God made the birds and the sea creatures. And then on the sixth day, he made the land animals, and he also made humans on the sixth day. He blessed the sea creatures and birds and told them to be fruitful and multiply. And then after he made the humans, he specifically gave them dominion over the other creatures. Now, at this time, time in history, God declared that the humans and the animals were to eat the plants. He said, I give you the plants for food. So at that time, the humans were not eating the animals. So I just also, as a side note, I wrote a blog yesterday about how the human digestive system has changed, and that now we must eat animal products or take man-made supplements to get enough B12 in our diets if we eat a vegan diet. So B12 deficiency is a serious thing, and so I hope you will, you know, if you're a vegan and you're listening to this, be sure that you're taking your B12. But I'll go into the reasons for how our bodies used to be able to eat a plant-only diet, but now we can't do that without supplementing. Okay, Genesis 2 goes into more detail and says that man was formed from the dust of the ground, and God breathed life into his nostrils. He planted a garden and put the man in the garden to work it and keep it, and said he could eat of all but one tree, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He let the man name the animals. Then he took a rib from the man and created a woman for the man to be his helper, because it wasn't good for the man to be alone, and the animals were not fit for the job. However, after this, the man and the woman disobeyed God, and they ate from the forbidden tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And because of this, they were cast out of the garden, away from God's holy presence. At this time, they were forced to work the earth to get food. But we are not told that they were given permission at this point to eat meat, which we know that they weren't. However, at that time, animal sacrifices were offered to God, so it is possible that some people were eating meat, since it says that animal Abel had a flock. However, we can't really assume that people were eating meat. We don't know. They might have, they might not have, we don't know. Humans after the fall were greatly influenced by Satan. Satan was the one who tempted them to disobey God. And because of this, they became so wicked that God decided to destroy everything he had made and flooded the whole earth. But he saved Noah and his family in the ark. So after the flood, we read in Genesis 9 that God gave Noah permission to eat animals, but he stated that he should not eat their blood. Unfortunately, sin still reigned in the world after the flood. This is why God later chose a man to become a chosen leader of a nation, the father of a nation, that would be under God's specific protection and control using a system of laws and sacrifices. This man's name was Abraham, and he is the father of the nation of Israel, or as some people know them, as the Jews. However, the law was not God's final solution to the problem of sin. After the Israelites, the Jews, fully demonstrated that it's impossible to change our sin nature by following laws, and it's impossible to be right with God, God sent his son Jesus Christ. And now, through faith in Jesus, rather than the sacrificial law, we can be born again with a new nature and have our sins covered by the perfect sacrifice and blood of Christ. This means that Jesus gave his own life so that we no longer have to sacrifice animals, and that we were forgiven when he gave his perfect sacrifice. Now humans are saved by grace and faith. We are saved when we believe that what Jesus did was to save us. So we're no longer under saved by following the law. Now, the law has still has some, you know, the law is still good in that it tells us what is right and wrong. So the Ten Commandments say that we should have no other gods except for the one God who created the world. We shouldn't worship idols. We should honor our father and mother. We shouldn't steal or lie or kill. And a few other things that I can't think of at this time. Oh, we should not commit adultery. So those are still, God still wants us to live in a lawful way, but we are not saved by living by the law. We are saved by the blood of Christ. So nowhere in the Bible does God ascribe human characteristics to animals, except once in a strange story of a talking donkey. But the donkey didn't keep on talking. It was just a weird thing that God did. And it doesn't say that animals were to be treated equally to humans. But it does say to treat them, you know, not to be cruel to them. So, and animals were a necessary part of the sacrificial system created by God to, so that humans could be forgiven for sins before Jesus. So we don't read anywhere about the people being wrong for making sacrifices. This was how God intended it to be. So now, is it wrong to eat animals? No. God said that people could eat animals. But if you don't want to eat animals, do you have to eat animals? No. You can eat whatever you want, and it is not a moral question. And that is the important thing to take away from all of this, is that these animal rights activists are trying to make food a moral issue, and eating meat a moral issue, when it is not, because God has already said that we can eat meat. We don't have to, but we can. If you want to eat a plant-based diet, some people feel better on a plant-based diet. Some people feel better on a very high-protein animal product diet. Find what works for you, because with our current state of health, every body is different. So we can't say that what works for me is going to work for you. You have to just try different things. And research has shown over and over that people might feel good on a vegan diet for a while and then feel bad later. So, you know, you have to be careful to not turn it into a religion. And I remember when I used to be pretty religious about my diet, and then I learned that, you know what? It's none of my business what other people eat, and it's not their business what I eat. So I kind of gave that up. However, I still do want to talk about nutrition, and that's why it's important for people to know B12 is a very important thing, and almost everyone should be supplementing. So check out my blog for that. So my conclusions are this. I conclude that like many social movements who don't know when their job is done, the animal rights and animal welfare, you know, which may have started as the animal welfare movement, the animal rights movement has the potential to become dangerous. Animal welfare is a good thing. Putting the rights of animals above humans is not. This movement is led by and supported by a body of dogmatic, confused, and sometimes narcissistic individuals, plus the well-meaning and bandwagon-jumping college kids and academics and political supporters who provide credibility and funding to the cause. Thanks to the internet, video, social media, these people are gaining popularity with people who don't question the facts, the motives, the goals. They're not thinking ahead of where this could lead. They don't see a problem with trampling the rights of humans while fighting for the rights of animals. They have long-winded explanations that make them sound like they have a good argument, until you take their ideas to their logical conclusions. Thankfully, there are people who are willing to oppose them, but this is going to get more expensive and more difficult as they start taking people to court, and the costs can go into the millions. So it will become easier to just give them what they want, and eventually they'll be putting everyone on a vegan diet. However, the additional danger that we need to be aware of is that once they get what they want, if they do, they will begin to look for other ways that they believe that animals are being discriminated against. And this is how critical theory works. They look for problems and then they try to change the way people are currently living. Whether it's a problem, you know, in other people's opinion or not, doesn't matter to them. So, and another danger of post-humanism is that it is a precursor to awarding rights to other non-humans, namely robots. But that is a topic for another article. So let's educate ourselves, keep our eyes open, and educate our children, and be willing to vote against people who seem like they might be falling for the extremists. And let's stay free and fight back against all types of extremism. And that's what the woke critical race theory movement is. That's, you know, we know We all know what we're talking about here. I mean, these people, these are the same people who think that it's okay to do permanent mutilation of children's bodies and claim that they are doing it for the child's own good. Okay? These are the same people that support PETA. So just keep that in mind. If you don't support transgender surgery for children, don't support PETA, because they're the same people. They're all the same critical theory, and they're narcissistic nutcases for the most part. Not everyone who supports them is, though, so those people need to get out of the movement. You know, love your kitties and love your doggies and love your horses and all that. Treat them kindly. But animals and humans are not the same. So thanks for listening. And if you want to let me know your thoughts on this article, you can email me at pkadams. Oh, wait, let me see. Let's see. Blue Skies and Green Pastures blog at gmail.com is, I will see that one for sure. Or you can use the Anchor message system. And if you like this, I hope you'll share it and leave me a review on Apple Podcast. And stay free. Bye now.